Greetings, Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Sean Dwyer, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
That's right. We have a new guest host this week to talk about film and the junk that's in film. For those who know who he is, will have gotten my clever little brilliant pun that I just made. Because Sean is from Film Junk. Is it filmjunk.com, right? And the Film Junk podcast? Is that what it is?
That is correct.
So we're going to talk to him a little bit about that and where you can find him. Obviously, if you didn't catch the website, we'll say it again. But just to get you caught up on the paperwork for our show, it's fatguysatthemovies.com. You can go visit us. You can check out all of our interviews and podcasts and movie reviews and DVD roundups and that sort of thing. You can go to iTunes and search Fat Guys at the Movies or Fat Guys Network, which has all of our podcasts available. Subscribe to it. Write us a review. Give us 5 stars. We hit number 3 in Kenya at one point,
nice.
Which kind of blew my mind. And one of our shows was up there in the top 5 in Turkey. I don't know why we do so well in foreign markets. Maybe it's because there's fewer people who actually have computers, and we just happen to have the 3 that do. But that happens. You can go to facebook.com/FGATM and like our page, and then you can check out all the cool stuff that we do. And you can go to, if you want to email us, you can email us at fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com, or you can call us at 740-205-6456. And that's how to get a hold of us. You can also get me on Twitter, twitter.com/KevinCarr. I got to start saying that's where to get it. But now, Sean, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, what you do, where people can find you, where they can stalk you, where they can send you hate mail and that sort of thing.
All right. Well, I'm Sean Dwyer, and I host a podcast over at filmjunk.com, and I'm also the editor of the blog there. Been doing it for about 5 or 6 years, just, big fan of movies, and have always enjoyed getting into discussions about movies, and that's what we're doing. So, I don't actually do it for a living. I actually am a video game programmer by day. But,
oh, really?
Yeah.
Do you do anything cool, or is it boring little video games?
I used to work at a company that did AAA console stuff, and now I'm doing more mobile games because it seems like that's kind of where the market's going right now.
You mean PS, personal things, or downloadable apps and that sort of stuff?
I've worked on Xbox 360 games and stuff like that, and now I'm doing more iPhone games.
Oh, okay. Anything cool that anyone would download? You're not one of the Angry Birds people or anything like that, right?
No, I wish. Everything that I've worked on so far has not actually been released up until now. But I still enjoy it. It's a good time, and definitely an interesting job.
Are you hoping to be one of the people from OMG Pop, that you create a little app that then suddenly Zynga buys for $200 million and then nobody plays afterwards?
Well, yeah, that'd be nice. But I don't know. I mean, right now, if I came up with a cool idea, the company would own it. So, I'd have to kind of keep it on the down low and then do it on my own at some point. That would be the best plan, I think.
That's cool. Well, there's a couple of reasons. One of them, it's neat because I've never really interacted much with people actually design video games. Most of the people I know work somehow in the film. I know a lot of people work in film, but I don't know a whole lot of people work in video games. So I find that interesting. I also find it interesting is your podcast, which is called, is it the Film Junk Podcast? Is that how it's referred to?
That's okay. Right.
I'm impressed by your podcast for various reasons, but also you are one of the longest running podcasts that I'm aware of in the film community. I mean, we're recording episode 269 of Fat Guys and Movies, and you guys are at what, 300 and what?
I think we just did 372. So yeah, we're closing in on 400. I know Film Spotting just did their 400th, but I don't know any others that are quite at that number right now. I don't know. I'm sure there's probably a couple others out there, but yeah.
There's only a handful, because I know last year we hit 200, and it was kind of a big deal, and there were a lot of people I knew who didn't. A lot of other podcasts, much bigger ones, even Slash Filmcast, that's not up there. It's just because it's a weekly thing, and it's just whenever you started. And a lot of the people who started the podcast in the mid-2000s just kind of fell off the grid, or didn't, or stopped, or just never really clicked. Or I mean, it was podcasting really only became viable about when you started doing it, right?
Yeah, and I mean, really, like, it's kind of like trying to keep a band together, to be honest with you. Like, you know, you got all these personalities and people, exactly. And you just, you know, it's finding time, and yeah, it is hard to keep it going for a long time, so I'm kind of surprised we've done it.
Well, congratulations, because that's actually really, that's really fascinating and great to have. So I have kind of like, you know, I bow down before you.
Well, thank you.
You have my respect. Now, the things I have to ask you about game designing are film related. The two movies I want to throw out to you. The first one, what are your thoughts on Grandma's Boy?
You know what? I haven't actually seen it. Everybody says I've got to see this movie. And I've seen like clips of it. So yeah. I'm assuming like I kind of know what it's about. And I think I would enjoy it. But I don't think it's entirely accurate as to what goes on. But I mean, obviously,
well, it never is.
Yeah.
But I just think it's funny because it is about video game designer. It's not a story about video game designers. It's a story about these idiots, but they happen to be video game designers.
Yeah, but I think, you know, it definitely portrays the people in the industry as, you know, sort of like these big kids who never grow up. And I would say that's pretty accurate.
Very similar to the film blogging community.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Throw that out there. Now, the other one I have to ask you about, because I just saw it. I recently saw it, and it was one of these few movies that I'll watch. I have to watch so many movies that it's rare for me to say, I just want to watch this movie that I kind of like, and I want to watch it again. I haven't, and I don't get a chance to do that, but I made a point to do that with this movie this week. Have you seen Existence by David Cronenberg?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, you a big fan of that?
Yeah, it's been a while, but yeah, I like it a lot. And I mean, there was a lot of like that came out like what, mid late 90s, something like that.
99, I believe. It was a good year for science fiction.
Yeah, there was a lot of that like virtual reality cyberspace stuff going on at the time. And I mean, now it feels a little dated, but I mean, I love Cronenberg. He's definitely one of my favorite directors, and that's a pretty unique take on those kinds of movies, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think it was what I found so fascinating about Existence. First of all, it's, I think, the last body horror that Cronenberg did. And I missed that. I mean, Eastern Promise is a great movie and History of Violence is a great movie, but we don't have body horror from Cronenberg anymore. I'd like to see him go back. But also what I love about that is it takes that virtual reality beyond it and sort of like where we are now with the very opening steps of it with Twitter and sort of the social networking where you can connect with a computer. I mean, we're far and away not at the level of Existence or Transcendence or anything like that.
Yeah.
But we're at those very opening stages that could happen maybe in 30 years where you can virtually put yourself in a world. And I found that fascinating.
Yeah. You know what's funny too is like, do you remember The Net, that movie with Sandra Bullock? Yeah.
We live tweeted that not too long ago.
Nice. Yeah, like so. I remember when that movie came out and just like thinking this is ridiculous because like people were hacking in and from everywhere and like she wasn't even connected to things. But it's like now it's actually kind of possible, right, with Wi-Fi and everything. So
well, yeah, absolutely. Well, and I remember there was a movie, it was called Firewall with Harrison Ford, and there's a scene where he just like pulls out his laptop. He's under a bridge somewhere in LA and he pulls out his laptop, he connects to the internet, and I'm like, that's not possible.
Well, yep.
Now it totally is. So you know what, when we are going to go out on this, we got to talk about movies, so we're going to go out on the trailer for That's My Boy. Adam Sandler continues his destruction of American cinema with a new comedy where he plays an immature father of Andy Samberg.
So what'd the IRS say?
You haven't paid taxes since 94, Donnie.
I'm going to prison if I don't get 43 lives.
Holy cow, that's my boy.
He moved out when he turned 18. I haven't seen him since.
He is one of the youngest hedge fund managers in the financial industry. Todd, your old man is here.
Donnie, what are you doing here?
What type of guy would miss his son's wedding?
You were basically the worst parent ever.
I was awesome.
You let me eat cake and lollipops for breakfast every day.
That's what you asked for.
You're supposed to say no.
And welcome back to Fat Guys of the Movies. We were just having a little discussion about game programmer movies and about the net and firewall and how technology has kind of caught up with itself. Another one, we'll get to That's My Boy. We're not all that interested to talk about that movie. But the other thing I found interesting about like sort of like those technology movies and computer and sort of even just entry into virtual reality. If you saw the movie Surrogates, did you see Surrogates with Bruce Willis?
Yeah, I did actually.
2-3 years ago?
Yeah.
I remember watching the movie. I had to go to like a midnight show of it. So I went to the midnight show and I watched it. And then afterwards I pull up my phone and I start tweeting about it from the theater. And I found it very ironic that I was tweeting about Surrogates, which kind of has this thing of saying, don't just sit at your home and virtually connect to all these people. And right, I literally just go to a virtual, you know, network and connect to other people. So,
yeah, well, I mean, you got to do it.
that's where the world's going to, I guess. I'm wondering. And what's even funnier is from as a film critic, we always get DVDs and that sort of thing sent for award screeners. And I always prefer to watch stuff at home if I can, because now I got a big screen TV and I got a Blu-ray player. So much nicer than having to fight the crowds and dealing with idiots in a movie theater.
Oh, yeah. So, I hear you.
So I think we're at the point now, virtually at home, that you can actually watch stuff with theater quality. And the only idiots you're going to see are those on screen, which is, of course, leading us into That's My Boy. See how I did that?
Nice. Amazing. Well done.
Neither of us have seen this. They've done very limited screenings. The screening I have is going to be late on Thursday night, so I have to. We're recording this before I see it. I wanted to ask you. I mean, you obviously haven't seen it either. But what are your thoughts on it leading up to it? Are you at all excited about this movie, or are you terrified?
Well, we were talking a little bit about Adam Sandler just before the show, and I haven't seen like the last few movies he's done. But it's weird because he starred in Funny People, the Judd Apatow movie, where it was kind of making fun of comedians who do these really lowbrow, high concept movies. And now Adam Sandler is doing those exact movies. Like, you know what I mean? And I feel like this is just part of that same group of movies he's been doing.
Well, and even to a greater degree, even. I mean, if you look at leading up to Funny People, he had been, I mean, even though I'm not a huge fan of his dramatic work, but he'd done stuff like Spanglish and Rain Over Me, which was terrible, but, you know, and Punk Truck Love, which got him a lot of, you know, street cred.
Yeah.
And he was doing some even like stuff like, you know, like, what was that one with the wishes? Bedtime Stories?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, which was cute enough. I mean, it wasn't terrible, but it wasn't, you know, he had done stuff like Big Daddy and you know, that stretch of movie, like even 50 First Dates, which was kind of a cute little romantic comedy. Now, and then he did, it's like he did Funny People, and they had all these jokes about like Merman and that sort of thing. And they had these jokes they didn't use, and they just used those for the rest of the Adam Sandler filmography coming up.
Yeah, I mean, Jack and Jill is probably... seems like it's scraping the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah.
But I would hope this one's maybe a little better than that. I actually kind of like Andy Samberg, so, you know, maybe he would bring something to the movie, but I don't know. The trailers to me just looked horribly unfunny.
It looks rough, and it's also almost 2 hours long,
which
always bothers me for a comedy.
Yeah.
Because I thought, I'm like, is Judd Apatow involved in this? Because he makes these really super long movies.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's a part of me that says it can't be worse than Jack and Jill, because Jack and Jill was terrible, and Grown Ups was terrible, and Just Go With It was terrible. So maybe this will be a little bit better. I'm going in with zero expectations, so yeah. It might be like okay. It's like the Three Stooges. I thought the Three Stooges was going to be god awful, and I'm like, well, it was okay.
I mean, the only thing that I found kind of interesting about the movie, from what I know about it, is that it's an R-rated comedy, and I don't think Sandler's done one of those in a while. If like, I'm not even too sure how many R-rated comedies he's done at all, to be honest with you.
Well, I mean, like Funny People, I believe, was R-rated.
Right.
But you're right. I don't think he's very much aimed towards the family crowd.
Yeah.
Like after Big Daddy. And The Water Boy and The Wedding Singer, all that sort of like that sweet rom-com type stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, this kind of seems like it's, I don't know. I think it's definitely influenced by like last summer, there were so many R-rated comedies, and I wasn't a huge fan of many of them, but yeah, I don't know. Maybe there's something interesting about seeing him kind of push the envelope a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I think it's so funny because I think there's people always try to identify trends with the rating of oh, well, there's R-rated comedies. Or if you go to church, I remember when I was younger, I'd go to church with my family, and there's inevitably there's always somebody be like, I was reading a story about how there are more PG movies made, and I'd like to thank God that that happened. And I'd be like, there's it. And then I remember like in the 90s when they did when the Farrelly brothers did like Something About Mary.
Right.
And they're like, oh, R-rated comedies are back. And I'm like, no, because Jane Austen's Mafia did terrible, and it was a bad movie. I think it just depends on whether it's a good movie or not, or even if it just connects with an audience.
So. Yeah, no, definitely. But I do think that, you know, obviously there are sort of these things that come in waves, and I don't know. I mean, I just felt like for Sandler to come out and do an R-rated comedy all of a sudden seemed like he was, you know, possibly influenced by that, but
yeah, maybe he had some bills to pay, and that's why he did all these other ones. And
yeah,
you know, because he can't honestly look at something like Jack and Jill and be like, I'm proud of that.
You know? So I don't know how he sleeps at night.
Yeah, exactly. I can't give it a preemptive suck because they are offering a screening to us, which we normally do. But I'm just going to withhold my review, and then you can, of course, go to the site and find out what it is. The next movie is Rock of Ages, in which Tom Cruise's ego takes center stage as a rock legend from the 80s in this jukebox musical.
Tonight, the Bourbon Room, Stacey Jacks.
This place is about to become a sea of sweat, ear-shattering music, and puke.
So start drinking now.
Bourbon. No, no, no. Now go.
When I was a kid, I wanted to be Stacey Jacks.
You're a singer, and you have real talent.
That stage is a pedestal. When you're up there, you're untouchable.
What are your thoughts on Rock of Ages? Now, I know you haven't seen it, but I want to know what you're expecting.
Well, I mean, I grew up in the 80s, and, you know, oh. I know it's based on a musical, and it's all about celebrating the excess of 80s, you know, hair metal, and I would be on board for that. But as soon as I saw the first trailer for this and I heard the music, the new renditions of these songs, they just sound so watered down and so bland that it just depressed me.
It, you know, a little bit, it reminds me of when, if you watch Monty Python and the Holy Grail and they do the Camelot song. That's so clever and fresh, and even now you can watch it, and it's just so Monty Python. And then if you go watch Spamalot, the musical, it loses something. It becomes a show tune at that point. And that's kind of where I felt with some of the songs in Rock of Ages. From the song perspective, what it is it's a soundtrack of really bad covers to fantastic songs you'd rather hear the original artist sing.
Right.
You know, and there's a lot of stuff that's great music, great songs. I grew up in the 80s too. I was 16 when this movie would have taken place. I was in 1987. So, I mean, it's got some great stuff in there, but it's just, it's like watching Glee. I mean, I guess that's popular, fine. But if you like to hear all the covers of great songs with other people singing them, watch Glee, and you get mashups and all that kind of stuff. But beyond that, the problem with this movie is it makes no sense. If you watch it, the chronology's all off. The writing's terrible. It's got terrible one-liners. And the characters don't make a lot of sense. They do something. In some ways, it looks like the story takes place over like 2 or 3 weeks, and then other times it seems like it's taken place over 2 years. And there's very ironically, but I don't know if the irony is lost on in the translation, because even like Catherine Zeta-Jones' character, where she plays kind of the church leader who's trying to stamp out rock and roll. They're singing to Twisted Sister, and I'm like, there's sort of an irony there, but I don't think anybody understands the irony as they're making the scene. They're just using the chorus, we're not going to take it literally, as opposed to understanding that it came from Dee Snider.
Yeah, that is a little weird. I don't know. One of the things I had heard about this movie is that it can't really make up its mind if it wants to be like, you know, a straight up comedy or like a parody of the 80s, or if it wants to actually kind of try to have a heartfelt story as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, on that note, we got to go to a break, but we'll continue talking about this when we get back.
Miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh yeah.
Welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. We are in the infamous middle segment with Sean from Film Junk. Sean, this is the famous, infamous middle segment. It's so famous, it's infamous. but you are allowed to swear in this segment. You can talk dirty or whatever.
Sweet. Like,
so feel free to say whatever you want to, you know, be offensive, whatever.
Well, I'm not that kind of guy.
Okay? Oh, you're not?
I'm not, but
are you one of those people who
maybe I'll throw a few F-bombs out just for fun.
Well, see, that's good because sometimes somebody swore in front of my kids or they heard somebody say something and they said, yeah, he says something that dad says when he drives.
Yeah.
I have a bit of a potty mouth, I admit, but but anyways, we were talking about Rock of Ages, and you made the point that it didn't know whether it was actually trying to make a heartfelt movie or whether it was just kind of being a parody of sorts.
Right.
And that's absolutely right. There's entire sequences. And I described it to a friend of mine, because I went and saw it. I was sitting next to Nick Harum, who's on the show last week. And I described it as we left. I said, it's kind of like the producer sent out a memo to everybody in the movie that said, this is a joke. This is kind of, we're going to cheese it up. It's all camp and silly. And like half the people didn't get it.
Yeah.
You know? And so, and it does that. It gets these points where it's very silly and very, you know, almost just, it's very silly and almost making fun of the decade and making fun of itself. And then there are times where you're like, are you trying to make a poignant moment? I mean, and it spins on a dime doing that too. I mean, there's this whole sequence with Tom Cruise and Malin Ackerman, and they're singing. And at one point, I'm like, are they taking themselves seriously with this? And it's not like a British humor where it takes itself very seriously and in that you find the humor. It just really felt like they were trying to connect. And then, like, she sticks her tongue in his ear. And I'm like, that's jarring. The other problem with it is it feels like it was trying to show how edgy and crazy the 80s were with the sex, drugs, and rock and roll, but they don't want to show any of the sex and the drugs. And like I said, the rock and roll is shitty covers of songs you'd rather hear from other people.
Right. And it is a PG-13 movie, right?
Yeah. Well, I think that's part of the thing is they're like, they don't want to offend people, but they're like, oh, it's so crazy. And like, there's a scene where two characters, they literally dry hump. They don't have sex. But it's like they have sex. At the end, they're like, oh, that was awesome. And I'm like, they didn't take off their pants. I've got three kids. I know you.
I think I might have to see this movie now.
I honestly think that it's going to be a movie that's going to crash and burn in release.
Yeah, I was going to ask what your thoughts on that were, because I could really see it going either way. Like, you made the comparison to Glee.
Yeah.
And I think it is trying to ride that, but Glee came out with the movie, was it last summer?
Yeah, it was last year.
And it like completely tanked, right?
Well, because you can get Glee for free watching television.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to see shitty covers of good songs, you see that every week on Fox for free out of the air. So yeah, I don't know. There's that whole thing too, because it's also very narrow, you know, they're not doing Lady Gaga. They're not even doing Madonna. They're doing rock ballads, and that's sort of that, you know, they got like Twisted Sister, they got Def Leppard, they've got, you know, REO Speedwagon, Journey, Van Halen, all that kind of music, and they're not doing other things, which is what Glee just does everything.
Right.
But what I was going to say is it feels like it's just going to bomb and nobody's going to care about it. And like 20 years from now, like drag queens are going to embrace it the way they did with the Valley of the Dolls.
Hmm.
Like, have you seen the Valley of the Dolls, the original, not the Beyond the Valley, the Valley of the Dolls?
No, I haven't seen it actually.
It's a real weird kind of, it's not a good movie, but when it was made in the 60s, it made some noise, but after it sort of like kind of disappeared for a while, the very flamboyant, you know, drag queen kind of community and the theatrical community kind of embraced it as camp, because it was true camp where it was done very just, you know, oddly, and it just plays so strange 20 years out of, you know, now 40 years out of, 50 years out of it. But back in the 80s and the 90s, they started doing revival shows of it where they'd replay the Valley of the Dolls. And it's actually hilarious to watch from that perspective. And I have a feeling that this is what it is, or it's trying to be like that.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the only thing I would say, like, is this movie too self-aware to actually, you know, build up that kind of following down the line? I don't know.
Yeah, that's what's going to keep it from doing that, if anything does, because it is trying to be, because camp really only really works when it's kind of unintentional.
Yeah.
You know, camp really works when it's a result of that. Oh, you know, we talked about, well, there's a movie we're going to talk about later, Top Gun. That's very campy. I mean, that's total 80s camp. But if you saw Top Gun, and when did that come out? 87, 88, 86, something like that?
Yeah.
That was a serious-ass movie. That movie was dead serious.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
And it did not play funny.
Yeah, and I mean, it's like something like Flash Gordon or something. Like,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, there's certain things that are intentional there, but the fact, you know, it plays as if, you know, they're kind of blissfully unaware of how ridiculous it is, and that's why it works.
Well, and the thing is, there are elements, like you said, there are elements of Flash Gordon, like when she starts cheering him, go Flash, go, that whole scene, when he, like, what is he grabs something, it's like a diamond or something, he runs it because it's a football, and those are meant to be funny, but there's another level of just, that's how they made movies back in the 80s, that was unintentional, and that's why I think Flash plays so well nowadays.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know if this one will catch on, because there's a lot of stuff that just, like I said, doesn't make sense. I mean, the timing's all off, and there's parts of it that I watch and I go, I could see where something like this would work on the stage. You can get away with a lot. You can get away with much more stilted dialogue in the theater, especially in a musical. You can get away with some very jarring and stupid, you know, happenstance character things, because the purpose of going to the theater is to see and hear the performance.
Right.
I really don't care to hear Julianne Hough sing, you know, whatever ballad she's going to sing in this movie. It's just, and plus she's annoying. I mean, she's pretty, but she's got that nasally voice, and she doesn't have a voice for an 80s rock ballad.
Yeah. Now, how is Alec Baldwin in this movie?
Embarrassing. He has the one funniest line in there. And there's one line where I was like, okay, that's funny. But, and there are times when he works, but again, it's like, he's very miscast, because he's that aging club owner, but because he's Alec Baldwin, he's kind of fat. So he doesn't quite look the part. And he doesn't quite play. He doesn't fit the role that he plays. You don't see Alec Baldwin and think, oh yeah, he's this guy who's owned this club. He sort of chews the scenery in his scenes. I think he's a brilliant comedian. He just didn't work in this. He does at times, but not throughout. And like Tom Cruise he's not terrible, but sort of like it's a one joke with him where he's just completely just out of it. And they have these long, long drawn out scenes with him, and they just kind of just keep feeding you that joke, and it stops being funny very fast.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, like the Tom Cruise thing in this movie, like I know a lot of people hate Tom Cruise now or whatever. Mm-hmm. I like Tom Cruise still, but like something about him in this movie just seems like he's trying a little too hard. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's feels like, I mean, he's decent in the movie. I mean, he actually is better than I thought he would be. Part of it is by saying, and Tom Cruise as Stacey Jacks, right, in the credits and the poster and in the trailers. It's almost like they're like, oh, yes, we've got the movie star.
Like, is he actually in it that much, though?
He's in it just as much as, you know, like any of the other characters. It well, see, and that's the thing. It has these stories, these characters that like disappear for 20, 30 minutes. And he's one of them. He disappears for a whole chunk of time and then he kind of comes back and I'm like, well, that I forgot about him. I kind of forgot that he was in the movie. They do the same thing with Catherine Zeta-Jones, who she slathers it on. I mean, she goes, over the top with crazy eyes in this movie. And I give her props for really throwing down on her performance, but it's really kind of bizarre. So maybe that's why she's depressed, because she was in this movie. I don't know. So I have to say, Rock of Ages sucks. that's the official Fat Guy's grade I give on it. So, are you going to go see it? Do you go see movies if you have to? How often do you review them for your site?
I don't know, not that often. Like most of the time, I will only see stuff I'm actually interested in. But this, you know, the thing with summer movies, like we're big fans of the drive-in at Film Junk, and there's certain kinds of potentially bad summer movies that are somehow great when you see them at the drive-in.
Yeah.
And I could see this being one of those movies, but I'd need a pretty solid double bill to actually go out of my way to see it.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It would be funny, but it's almost like, well, now it's trying to be funny. And that loses the charm. Like we just, I do, the people listening to the show know this. I live tweet movies on Saturday nights. Me and a bunch of other people get together on Twitter and we all play the same movie and we watch it and we make fun of it. And like this last week we watched Slugs, the movie. That's actually how it was titled. It was Slugs, the movie, as opposed to Slugs, the novel or Slugs, the Broadway musical. But we watched Slugs, the movie, which takes place, it was made in the late 80s, about the time that Rock of Ages was. And it's about, you might guess, killer slugs that overrun a town. And the health commissioner, whose character's name is Mike Brady, of all things, is trying to stop this from happening. And he's trying to uncover the evil slugs that are killing everybody. But that movie, they really seriously were trying to make a horror movie. They were trying to make a sci-fi horror movie, but they had no budget and it's really poorly done. And that's where the humor is. This movie, it's kind of like sometimes with like Trauma, as much as I love Trauma will sometimes, they're too aware that they're making a comedy rather than a horror movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree with that.
So it does kind of lose something there, but yeah, I don't know. This is kind of one of those off weeks because the last, you know, we've had some really big, you know, we had Prometheus last week, whether you loved it or you didn't. It was a big release. You know, we had Avengers a couple weeks ago or a month or two ago. This is sort of reminds me of when and even like when Battleship came out, at least that was a big movie. It felt like a big movie as epic of a failure as it was. But, you know, this kind of feels like the week that Dark Shadows came out.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're for our podcast, we're doing something different. We're actually reviewing Cosmopolis because that's playing in Toronto right now. But we weren't super psyched to see this or That's My Boy. So
so you said, let's do the Cronenberg hometown hero.
Yeah, because
you're Canadian, right? Because you know him. I'm sure you know David Cronenberg, because Canada, everybody in Canada knows everybody.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we know him personally.
He comes by and has a beer with you guys later. You know what I did watch, because this is a Canadian connection? I watched Goon not too long ago.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good one, actually.
Are you a fan of that? Are you a big hockey fan?
Yeah, actually, I am. I mean, I'm not the big sports guy on the podcast. There's a couple other guys who like sports a lot more than me, but hockey is definitely my favorite sport. And I thought Goon was like one of the best hockey movies that I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, what I thought was neat about Goon is it, not being a hockey fan, because I'm not a sports fan at all. So, you know, hockey, American football, doesn't matter. I'm kind of disinterested in it at all. But It definitely seemed to connect with your hockey fan, but I felt it was totally accessible to somebody who didn't care about hockey.
Yeah, I mean, I think they got the characters right, and you know, the feel of, you know, sort of the minor leagues and stuff, like that stuff was right if you're a fan of hockey, like, you know, you got it. But just the characters work, and I think Sean William Scott is perfect for that role. So
he's very sweet. He's such a sweet guy, but he's they don't force Gump him, which I think is good.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy to say, well, he's slightly retarded, so he's going to be just this simpleton and nice, but he's really good at fighting. And I'm like, that's what I felt it was going to go to. But you're like, no, this is a guy that's just what he's good at. You know, if he were born in the Middle Ages, he'd be a knight.
Yeah, pretty much.
So at this point, we're going to talk a little bit about box office, and I've been sort of needling Sean here about the Canadian connection. When they do box office, do they? Is that? I've never known this, but is Canada lumped into the opening weekend box office as well as?
I don't think so. I think they have separate numbers for that, but I don't think anyone looks at it unless there's like. Every now and then you'll hear like some movie will come out and it'll be like, oh, this is now the biggest movie ever in Canada. Like a couple years ago, it was Bon Cop, Bad Cop.
Okay.
I think that's still our biggest, highest grossing Canadian movie ever. But yeah, for the most part, I don't think anyone pays attention to Canadian box office numbers.
But there's like a whole weird thing. And I ran into somebody about 10 years ago, and he was a Canadian filmmaker. And he said there's an entire industry of films made for Canada, in Canada, with Canadian money, but they don't export them.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think most countries kind of have that, where there's, like, funding for, you know, filmmakers within the country, and they usually are movies that are sort of, you know, pushing the cultural, you know, values of that country. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what it is. Like, I don't know. I there's not a lot of great films coming out of Canada because, you know, generally if a Canadian filmmaker is successful, they're going to move to Hollywood, right?
Like Cronenberg. But Cronenberg does stuff.
He's one of the few who has kind of kept it real and does still live in Toronto and shoot most of his movies there. And, but yeah, like it is tough. And I think a lot of other countries suffer from the same thing. Although, yeah. Because of the language barrier and stuff, I think there's a lot more built-in audience in some of those other countries, whereas in Canada, we all just watch American movies, so it's really hard to get people to sit down and watch a Canadian movie.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and there's another frequent guest host, or he's been on a couple times on Fat Guys, Ronald Nichols, from Box Office Buzz, and he's up near Calgary. And it's interesting talking to him because every now and then there's kind of like, oh, yeah, that's not opening here. But usually if it's a big release, like you're getting both Rock of Ages and
that's my boy. Yeah. I mean, most of the major releases come here. Actually, Toronto in particular, I'm not sure what Calgary's like, but Toronto is actually a really great city for film. Like there's a lot of great rep cinemas and yeah, like most of the limited release stuff comes here pretty quickly. So,
yeah. But I mean, they're not like, they don't like not release That's My Boy, and they don't have like Mounties posted between Detroit and Windsor to keep people from racing across the bridge to go see That's My Boy in the wrong country or anything like that.
No, not that I'm aware of.
Okay. I just wanted to double check. Anyways, the movies that what topped the weekend last week was Madagascar 3, Europe's Most Wanted, was $60 million ish, which was good. It was like grossing approximately what the other ones did, what the last one did, but of course it had a 3D bump, which means it wasn't ticket wise doing as well, but still $60 million for the movie was well above its expectations. And then Prometheus, which some people were going to predict for the weekend win, I didn't think it was going to win the weekend because it was R-rated and it was going against a family film. It made $51 million. It actually cracked the $50 million barrier and went up a little bit when the actuals came out. Did you like Prometheus, first of all? Did you like it or did you see it?
Oh, man. Yeah, I saw it. Still lots of debate going on over this movie. And on our show, I was the one who was kind of the negative, had the negative take on the film. I mean, I didn't hate it, but I thought it was kind of a mess. Lots of too many things unanswered, like just too much stuff where the viewer had to fill in the blanks, I think. But I do agree with a lot of people that probably a second watch would help a bit. So,
yeah, I'm actually going to try and catch it again this week. I want to see it because I had avoided any sort of marketing so much that it took me a good 45 minutes to be like, what the hell is this movie? What is this even trying to be at this point? Because it was not Alien. And it just, that was, it took me some time to kind of get my footing in the movie. So I kind of want to see it again.
Yeah.
Although what I find funny is I can't think of a movie in recent history that more people who didn't like it are as pissed off at the people who liked it as this movie.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we were seeing on Film Junk. Just a lot of people on both sides and really a lot of heated arguments. And I mean, it's good. I mean, I like to see a movie that gets people talking. But yeah, I think some people do take it a little too personally.
Yeah, I've just seen several people. I mean, because like even like I use the example of somebody I was talking the other day about it. Like the Twilight movies. A lot of people hate those movies. And right. There's a very rabid fan base for it, and they do very, very well. And there's the people who hate the movies. They hate the movies, but they kind of just brush off the fans because they're like, oh, they're girls or they're women, and you know, it's an emotional fantasy. And I don't, they don't go after the, they may call them immature, but they don't like hate on the fans necessarily.
Right.
But I've seen more people just get pissed off on, especially like Twitter, like around Monday. It was after the movie came out. It wasn't even like on Saturday. It was on Monday when, you know, people kind of steamed up and they started like, how could you like that movie? How dare you like that movie about Prometheus? And I kind of was shocked at how many people were so pissed off at people who had a different opinion.
Yeah, no, definitely.
So anyways, we don't do that. You know, I loved it. You didn't like it. I don't hold it against you.
I appreciate that.
Well, you're welcome. What do you think's going to win this weekend?
I don't know. Good question. I would guess, I'm going to guess That's My Boy, but I don't know. It could be Madagascar 3 again.
I'm putting my money on Madagascar 3. I think it's going to see a very small drop. It's probably going to have like a 40% drop, maybe less. So it'll be right there at like 40 million. I think it'll be right around 40 million. I don't think Rock of Ages is going to even come close. I think it has the demographic that is not what Hollywood's going for. Hollywood wants that 18 to 25 demographic. It's not going to get that.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely for an older audience, people who grew up in the 80s or, yeah, you know, at least remember the 80s. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it has, I think you're talking 40 and above. I'm 40 and I was just old enough to be 16 when this came out, so when this takes place. So if you're looking, aiming for people who are like mid teenagers in the 80s, yeah, you're talking people in their 40s and above. And they usually, a lot of times they'll wait, you know, or they'll go see it in the free screenings, but I don't see a whole lot of these people stampeding to the theaters.
The other thing is the Tom Cruise factor, you know, like it's still, yeah, Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol did great, but I think he's still, people are still very tentative on him for whatever reason, and yeah, he could hurt it. I don't know.
Well, I think with, when it comes to Ghost Protocol, it was such a good movie that people liked it whether or not he was in the movie.
Yeah.
You know, you could have had anybody else in there, and as long as they were competent, people are like, I don't care, because it's a great freaking movie and it's a lot of fun, and it delivered on everything a Mission Impossible movie should. Whereas I think like, take like Men in Black, for example, I think you can rest a lot of that success or softness of the box office, because it hasn't been a huge hit. It's done well, but it hasn't been a monster runaway hit. You can blame or credit Will Smith for that, because he's so integral to that movie. I think people, you know, Tom Cruise, when it comes to Mission Impossible, I think people liked Mission Impossible whether or not Tom Cruise was in it. So yeah, I don't think it's going to be, I would say it's probably going to be Madagascar 3, That's My Boy, probably Rock of Ages, and then Prometheus.
Yeah. Although maybe all the buzz, good or bad, could bump Prometheus up a bit. You never know.
That's possible. I'm curious to see what it's going to do in terms of legs, because it's definitely a discussion piece, and I'm curious about the repeat viewing of it.
Yeah, definitely.
So that's that. I do have one thing. This wasn't in the show notes. I have a story to tell, because I promised somebody I would on the show. And it was our friend, the show, a good friend of the show, Mel Valentin from Very Aware and various other places, Fjorderfish on Twitter. He was talking about Magic Mike, and he said, "Well, it's inspired me to go back to the gym." And I sort of cavalierly tweeted out, I go, "Oh, I should tell you the story about one time when I was offered to become one of the team of male strippers." And I don't know if you've seen pictures of me.
I have, yes.
Yeah, I do not have the exact same physique as like Channing Tatum and Matthew McConaughey. Hey.
Okay.
I'm a little chubbier, just a little bit. If I had both of their bellies and none of their muscles and then gained 50 pounds, that's probably a good way to describe me. I'm white. I'm very pale. I'm fat. I'm bald. I have a beard. And I was actually approached by a guy who wanted to partner with me as male strippers. This guy was a tall, he was totally tall, dark, and handsome. He was a tall, really good looking black guy. And I mean, he was dark, dark black. So we would have looked like one of those cookies you buy if you stand us together. Cause I mean, he was really dark and just like ripped too. I mean, this guy was in shape, and he was like, yeah. And he said, what happened was he was working at a counter at a Panera Bread, and I was buying something, and I paid with ones, and they were kind of crappy ones, and I go, oh yeah, these were from my job or something like that as a joke. And he's like, well, if you ever want to do this, because he used to do exotic dancing. And I'm like, are you serious? I mean, did you look at me? And he's like, oh yeah, yeah, you'd be great. He said, because what we could do is we could pair up as basically opposites. And because he's so good looking and so in shape and so dark, and I am so just doughy and white and fat. And he said you did this once with somebody else before, and he's like, oh my God, it was a huge hit at like bachelorette parties and stuff like that. And he was like, no, seriously, we could do this. And I was on television at the time. I was doing TV spots for movie reviews, which I don't do now. And I was like, I can't do it and be on TV. And that's why I didn't pursue it any further. But I seriously thought about it because I have no shame.
Do you regret this decision?
I do regret. And he doesn't work there anymore. So like, I want to go back and be like, hey, you know, I don't even remember what his name was, but I can't. Do you remember that really tall, good looking black guy who was really like ripped? Do you have his phone number? Because I want to see. He offered me a job.
Well, you know, it's funny. Like, I haven't been to a male strip club before, but you know, from what I hear, the ladies aren't so. It's not so much about the physique and stuff. They just like to have a good time. So you know what? I can buy that. I can see how that might work.
Well, yeah, because he says he said it's about your presentation. It's about your confidence.
Yeah.
And you've seen the classic sketch with Patrick Swayze and Chris Farley.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God, they're both dead. It's the dead people sketch. The Chippendale sketch.
Yeah, it's classic.
You know what? And I think Phil Hartman was like the announcer. Everybody in that sketch is dead now. Isn't that terrifying?
That's sad. Wow.
Yeah. But yeah, that classic one with Chris Farley doing it. And that's actually true. I do radio spots and I do a local station in town. And I happen to be Bobby Lee. Do you know who Bobby Lee is? The comedian?
No, I don't think so.
Did you see the latest Harold and Kumar movie?
No.
Okay. You've seen the ads for it. He's the guy who was like, it's going to make Avatar look avatarded.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah.
He's this tiny little, I think he's like, he's either Korean or Chinese or something like that. He's doughy. He's not really tall. He's kind of dorky looking. But he was talking on the radio and he's like, yeah, he has no trouble getting women because of his confidence. And that's what women are attracted to, that, which is why I'm such a ladies man. I couldn't even say that with a straight face. So that's something else I want to rant on this with not Magic Mike, Rock of Ages. There's a whole sequence where, I guess this is marginally spoilers, where Julian Huff's character becomes a stripper.
Okay.
And if there's one thing I cannot stand in movies, is when they show like a strip club, and it's ragingly clear that nobody who worked on this movie has ever stepped foot in a strip club. You know, I mean, you've been to strip clubs, haven't you? Have you?
I've been to one or two, yeah.
One or two. I've been to them before, yeah. But there's a certain thing, and the whole thing is she's go there. She's like, well, I'll be a waitress. I don't want to dance. And she's like, well, you make more money as a dancer. And it's like Mary G. Blige is the madam of the strip club. Which, first of all, that doesn't happen. And so she's like trying to convince her to dance, and she's only making like singles for when she's getting tips for drinks. And like they show one of the dancers next to her. She's like got 50s and 100s. And I'm like, but they're like seven, like literally a dozen girls on stage at once, which, first of all, that doesn't happen. And they're all in bikinis, and no one ever does like lap dances or private shows, or they go to the champagne room or anything like that. I'm like, and that was the level of watching this movie where I think they didn't want to. They're like, well, we don't want to get dirty. We don't want to act like perverts here. Yeah, but right. I'm like, well, if she's going to be a stripper, and she's going to make decent money at it, she's got to at least do. You don't make that with dollar tips on the stage. You know, that's, so it's. Anyways, my strip club experiences are coming through. Anyways, any strip club experiences you want to talk about? Were you ever a male stripper?
No experience as a male stripper. I'm kind of the opposite of you. I'm like way too skinny to ever, you know, consider something like that. Probably equally as pale as you, though. So,
well, that's cool. We wouldn't make a good team because both be.
Yeah, it wouldn't work. We'd be too similar.
If they put me under those black lights, I would glow. I totally would. So, anyways, we should probably move on to do the Fat Guy Five.
Let's do it.
And this is in honor of Tom Cruise and his saggy chest in Rock of Ages. This is our five favorite Tom Cruise performances. And the first one on the list, we're gonna do. We already talked about this a little bit. Is Mission Impossible: Ghost Protocol? This is easily the best Mission Impossible.
I agree with that.
Yeah, and he works in the movie. He doesn't have crappy hair like he did in Part Two. Yeah. I thought he was perfectly what he needed to be in that movie.
Yeah, although I think his chest was a little saggy in this one as well.
It is. Well, because I don't know what it is. It's like because his last three movies being Rock of Ages, Mission Impossible, and Night and Day, they've had very obvious, obligatory shirtless scenes.
Yeah, although I thought he looked okay in Night and Day, but there was a scene in Mission Impossible where I don't know if you remember this, where he's like
he's on the roof, on the building,
you know, yeah. Like on the side of the building there when he's trying to escape.
Yeah,
and there's just this quick shot, and it looks so weird. It looks like he's wearing like some sort of prosthetic chest or something. I don't know.
It's like he had this is what it looks like. It looked like he had really big pecs at one time. And his skin kind of he doesn't have as big of chest muscles, and his skin kind of sags a little bit. It's gravity. I mean, the guy's all damn near 50.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure you take Julia Roberts, look at her tits. They're probably hanging down to her belly button too.
You know? Yeah, that's true.
But she's allowed to have a bikini, you know, hey. Or it was Cameron Diaz in Night and Day. See, I noticed that in Night and Day. I did notice that. I said, he looks good for a guy in his late 40s. But
yeah,
he's still got a little bit of gravity going on.
Well, wait a minute. He's almost 60.
He's 49. No, he's 49. He's not almost 60.
Liam Neeson. 1962. That's when he was born. So what's that?
50.
Oh. All right. You're disappointing me. I thought he was older than that.
No, Liam Neeson just turned 60.
Yeah, that's true. That's pretty
And
crazy.
that guy could punch your teeth through the back of your head.
Yeah, and I mean, he's doing more action movies now than he ever did when he was younger.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, Tom Cruise looks great for damn near 50. I hope I look. I wish I could look that good now, but I'm 40. So.
Yeah, actually, like something to say about Mission Impossible: Ghost Protocol as well is that he apparently did as many of his own stunts as possible.
Yeah.
So, and you know, again, with him getting up there in age, I got to give him props for that.
Yeah, I like it when people do that, because too many special effects get a little goofy. Like, you end up with, you know, the Christopher Lee face painted on some martial arts guy in Attack of the Clones type look, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Not like I was expecting Christopher Lee to, I mean, I mean, that guy's like 186 years old, so he gets a pass on that.
Yeah.
The next great performance by Tom Cruise, that's one yours. That was your suggestion.
Collateral. Yes. Yeah. I mean, I didn't see this when it came out. I only saw it like in the past couple of years because everybody was raving about his performance in the movie. And yeah, I think he's pretty awesome in it actually. And it's strange because one of your other choices that we'll get to, you mentioned he's a villain.
Yeah.
But I was going to say the same thing about Collateral, that, I mean, he doesn't play villains that often, but you know, he does a great job with it here.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, there are some people that can play great villains because they have a look, you know, and they can play heroes or they can play villains. It's tough for Tom, because Tom Cruise is such a pretty boy.
Yeah.
And he's got that smile. And even if you gussy him, I mean, even if you dull him down, he still looks really good. It's hard to have that handsome of a villain. But I thought they affected it well with Collateral. I thought they did a great job with it in Collateral. Not just because they just put some sheen in his hair. I mean, he fit the villain. You can't take him and make him a mad drug dealer or something like that, you know.
Right.
But you can make him, well, what he was the basically the slick kind of secret agent type, only he was a really bad dude.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I'm a fan of Michael Mann, so obviously, you know, throwing him in a Michael Mann movie, I think it was a great fit.
Yeah, absolutely. The next one is Magnolia, which I thought was one of his... He's a good actor. Tom Cruise is a good actor, and he can definitely emote and take on different roles, and I thought this was one of his lesser acknowledged performances. I mean, everybody stampedes towards, like, Born on the 4th of July and Rain Man, and Rain Man was the one that really... kind of people were like, oh no, he's not just, you know, just a pretty boy action star. But I thought that Magnolia, he really got something in there. I mean, that's such a morose, deep, you know, heavy movie.
Yeah.
And I thought he fit right in with it.
Yeah. And I think, like, well, I don't know. I mean, the thing about Magnolia is, like, it's kind of a funny role too, right? Like, it's kind of one of those, like, when Magnolia came out, this was a big thing. Everybody was talking about, oh, Tom Cruise is amazing in this movie. He's hilarious. Yeah. And but, like, you know, he's done some stuff. We'll get to another one where he's kind of clearly, you know, having fun with a comedic performance. But this is one of the first roles where it was almost like he was making fun of himself a little bit by taking on the role, if that makes any sense.
Have you seen the special features on Magnolia?
No, I don't think so.
They have videos of, it was Ted Mackey, wasn't that the character's name? They have his videos, like, they have his, like, how to pick up women demo videos. they're really hilarious because he, and I don't know how the hell to pronounce, Mary Ratzkab or whatever her name, and she played Chloe in 24. So she's always kind of a little odd looking, and she's the girl he's trying to pick up in all these videos. And it just looks so, they're so funny because it's him as the character teaching you the Ted Mackey way.
Right. So. Yeah. Actually, now that you mention it, I think I have seen those and, yeah, pretty awesome.
They're clever. The next one, we have, well, we kind of split on this one. So we're going to, we'll each give one. Mine is Taps. And that is one of his first films. I think his first film was Endless Love. He had a bit part in it, which was very, very small. But Taps, it takes place in a military school. And he actually plays the kid that kind of goes bonkers and, you know, really kind of almost takes the siege too seriously. And he's kind of the villain, but sort of that misunderstood villain, but still he's the guy on the edge. He's not the hero of that movie at all. But he does a great job. And if you watch him, you really see a good performance that comes out before he became this big star.
Right. Yeah. And I haven't seen Taps, but I mean, from what you're saying, I'd like to check it out for sure. Yeah. So I went with something else, which I understand you're not the biggest fan of, but, you know, I thought out of everything we're talking about, I think we needed sort of like an all-American hero performance, because that's kind of was his bread and butter, at least definitely throughout the 80s and stuff. And so I went with Top Gun. Yeah. You know, Tony Scott classic. And yeah, it's pretty overblown and pretty, you know, testosterone driven and all that stuff. But it's a classic and I love it.
Yeah. And well, it's so iconic for him, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Such an iconic role. And what's interesting is when we live tweeted that movie not too long ago, and one of the live tweeters sent out I'm sure people have seen the picture where they take all the characters from Top Gun and they show pictures of them now. Yeah. And like Tom Cruise still looks pretty good, and Anthony Anderson just looks like not Anthony Anderson, not that guy, Anthony Edwards looks, he just got old. But like Kelly McGillis, what the hell? And like They took like the fattest picture Val Kilmer.
Val Kilmer, yeah.
Yeah, and so it's a great image because you're like, well, Tom Cruise kind of weathered the storm the best.
Yeah, that's true, because Kelly McGillis was in The Innkeepers, right, recently?
Yeah, yeah.
And at first I didn't even realize it was her, and then when I did, I was like, whoa, like, yeah, that's crazy.
Well, what's funny is I when I watch The Innkeepers, they're rolling the credits. I'm like, oh, Kelly McGillis is in this movie. Whatever happened to her? Oh, okay. And then the character I was watching, I knew Kelly McGillis was in the movie, and then the woman, I'm like, there was something vaguely familiar about her.
Right.
I'm like, who is that? I literally had to look it up on the internet, and look it up. I'm like, oh my god, that is Kelly McGillis. And it was just like, wow, what happened? I mean, age was not good to her.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Tom Cruise has got the money to maintain certain things, but yeah, it's crazy.
Well, and if you go back and you watch Top Gun, you can see where Kelly McGillis was going to go there, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, I was having a conversation with my wife recently about, you know, some actors, some will go old gracefully, some will just look like hell. You know, have you seen the pictures of Lark Voorhees? You know who Lark Voorhees is?
I don't think so.
From Saved by the Bell. She was the little black girl on Saved by the Bell.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And she's adorable. And then they're recently she was on a TV show, and it's just like she looks terrible now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And but I like use the example of like Susan Sarandon. I'm trying to remember who it was, because it was somebody who has the you know, kind of like eyes like Susan Sarandon, where they're big eyes, and I said, well, she's not going to, you know, that's going to look bad. She looks adorable now, but it's not going to look bad. It's going to look bad later. And I use Susan Sarandon as an example, because if you go find early performances of Susan Sarandon, you watch Rocky Horror Picture Show, she's really cute in that. And then she like hit like 30, and then bam, looked old, or suddenly her eyes sunk in and she lost that beauty, but then she kind of stayed there.
Right.
Susan Sarandon kind of looks now like she did 20 years ago. She doesn't look like she's aged that much. She's aged more like from 1975 to 1985 than she has since 1985. So, you know, maybe that is. It's just the worm turns the wrong way for some people.
Yeah, I guess so.
The last one, I'll let you take that last one. It's both that we both have to agree on, because it's a great performance.
Yeah, so Tropic Thunder, which, you know, it's a smaller role in that movie, but it's the one everyone talks about, and apparently he's potentially getting his own movie out of it as well. So, yeah, I was a big fan of him as Les Grossman, and, you know, just, again, I think it was just before this, he had done that Lions for Lambs movie, and it was like this attempt to do this really serious political drama. And it just totally backfired on him. And so then the next year, he just did this little role to show, you know, hey, I don't take myself that seriously. And I think it was a great move.
Yeah. And I can always appreciate when an actor does that, because Tom Cruise is a bit of an ego guy. And that really shows if you watch like the special features and the behind the scenes stuff on Night and Day. Like the best way to see those is if you ever see documentaries where the camera's just following somebody around.
Right.
It's like watching, have you ever seen Full Tilt Boogie? Which is, yeah, that's the making of From Dusk Till Dawn. You really see what kind of an attention hog George Clooney is.
Right.
It's sort of like anytime he walks in a room, he expects to kind of be the center of attention. And even though he's a real charismatic guy, you see that in these behind-the-scenes things, and you're like, well, he's kind of an egomaniac. And you see that with Tom Cruise in this. And there's a scene where he's talking to the Black Eyed Peas about the song they did for Night and Day. And you can really see that come out. So, but anybody who can then take themselves a little less seriously, I always have a little bit of respect for.
Yeah, so. Definitely.
Anyways, with that, is there anything else you want to get off your chest? Anything you want to talk about? Anything you want to rant about? Something happening in the film world?
No, not really. My mind is still occupied with Prometheus, whether good or bad. So
you don't know where it's going, huh?
Yeah.
Well, cool. Well, we'll let you think about that a little bit more while we go to a break. And welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. We had actually a pretty good middle segment. We were talking a little bit more about Rock of Ages, and we talked about box office, and told a little story about me being approached to be a male exotic dancer. Also talked about our favorite Tom Cruise roles. So that was a fun time for our new guest host Sean from Film Junk. But what's coming up next?
It's the world famous DVD roundup.
That's right. We have the world famous DVD. I'm going to let you go first because you've only got one, because I hogged all of them, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a huge release week, but I just had a small movie to mention, and I haven't actually seen it, but I've seen the trailer, and I thought it looked pretty cool. It's a French film called The Assault, and I guess it's based on a true story of a hijacking that occurred on an Air France flight. The SWAT team was sent in, and basically it seemed kind of like United 93 without the whole 9/11 thing. So
yeah.
It looked pretty cool to me. I'll probably check it out at some point.
Are you a big fan of French cinema? Do you like foreign films?
I'm neither here nor there. If there's a good movie and it's a foreign film, then I'm all for it. But it's not like I go out of my way to seek them out.
Okay. No, that's cool. Yeah, because some people are like, well, I don't like American movies.
Yeah, or then there's the people who are like, I don't like to read when I'm watching a movie.
Yeah. The only thing that bothers me about subtitles is not that I have to read, not that it takes concentration, but it's trying to keep your eye on the action and reading the subtitles at the same time, especially if there's a lot going on. If it's a dialogue piece, it's not so bad. But
yeah.
Yeah. That's my biggest problem with subtitles. Or if I'm in the house and I'm like trying to do something, you know, if I'm doing like busy work while I'm watching, it's a little harder to read.
Yeah.
So I'm not a total snob. Other ones from that are new this week, we've got, of course, Sherlock Holmes, A Game of Shadows, which is the latest Guy Ritchie Sherlock Holmes movie, which I liked. I actually watched it a second time. I enjoyed it quite a bit. Do you like those films?
I liked the first one a lot. And the second one I wasn't as big on, but I kind of feel like it deserves another chance. I don't know. I might check it out at some point.
Yeah, what's funny, it grew on me a little bit watching it the second time. I like the fact that they have Moriarty in there, and they kind of play with the conventions they threw in to the first film, so they play a little bit with that. There's also Ghost Rider, Spirit of Vengeance, which was a terrible film. I don't know if you disagree with that or not.
I do not disagree with that. I had high hopes for this, thought it looked like a cool, trashy, over-the-top film, and it just was boring.
Yeah, I am not a big fan of Neville Dean Taylor. I just don't like their stuff, and this one was just, it just was silly and stupid and not in a good way. So there's also Tyler Perry's Good Deeds, which thought I'd mention because it's out. I haven't seen it. I've kind of stopped watching Tyler Perry movies. I've seen about a half dozen of them, and they all go through the same motions. I don't know. Are you a big Tyler Perry fan?
I don't think I've seen any of his movies, to be honest with you.
He's got at least one good one, and then all the rest are the same.
Yeah.
There's the Lethal Weapon collection on Blu-ray, so that's worth picking up. I haven't seen the transfer yet, but it's those are great movies, so they're worth checking out. And also Scandal season 1, which is a TV show from Shonda Rhimes, who I can't stand Shonda Rhimes, but this is decent. It stars Kerry Washington, and I think she's gorgeous. She plays a lawyer in Washington who kind of she kind of she's like a fixer. She's a freelance sort of fixer of things, and she's actually based on a character of a woman who I believe worked in the Bush, George W. Bush's White House, or worked for her. And it's just sort of like to kind of spin things and work on things that every politician runs into. It's not a bad show. It hasn't deteriorated like Grey's Anatomy or Private Practice. So that's worth checking out. And there's a couple other like stuff from ABC that got canceled, like GCB and what's the other one? Missing with Ashley Judd.
Right.
So, and then the stinker of the week is Father's Day. It's a trauma movie, co-produced with Trauma. I actually started watching this film. I could not get through it. It's about a guy who is seeking revenge and avenging the death of his father, the death and assault of his father as an adult. And it's just, it tries to be a grindhouse movie, but it just is like kind of just dirty and unpleasant. I don't know. Are you a fan of that, grindhouse cinema?
I mean, I like the concept. I mean, I'm by no means an expert on that kind of stuff, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, I find it to be kind of hit and miss, like Trauma stuff. I like some of it, and some of it is just plain bad. So
yeah, it's a co-production with a group, and they did a movie called Manborg, which I actually saw at the Sci-Fi Marathon, which I liked, but I liked it for very specific reasons. But I can see where the directors behind that could have it go horribly wrong, which it did in Father's Day. With that, it's review wrap up. We've got Rock of Ages, which I said sucked, and That's My Boy, which we didn't get a chance to see, so it does not get an action. Doesn't even get a preempt to suck because they are providing a screening. Next week, we've got Brave, the new Pixar movie. Looking forward to that one. There's also Seeking a Friend for the End of the World with Keira Knightley and Steve Carell. Yet Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. Curious about that one. I wonder if it's either going to be great or terrible. So we'll see. Anyways, we got about 15 seconds. Sean, tell us where you can find you.
Filmjunk.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at Filmjunk. And yeah, that's pretty much it. Pretty simple.
Yeah, go check them out. Check them out, the podcast. Check out the website. And we'll talk to you guys next week.
Like the show you just heard? Then head on over to FatGuysAtTheMovies.com to hear more. Fat Guys Network flagship show, Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The Idiot Boxers with Kevin and Merrill. Celluloid Spotlight with Merrill and Hash. And if you like any of what you hear, kick us a few bucks using the donation button on the sidebar. Or just leave us an iTunes review. Fat Guys Network is where the ooey-gooey podcasting goodness is at 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.